From the heart of the Forest City, Blackburn Media presents the Craig Needles Podcast, looking at the biggest stories in London and around the world and how they impact you. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
Another brand new episode of the Craig Needles Podcast here at ClassicRock981.com, LondonNewsToday.ca, and of course, whichever podcast app you prefer, you can find us there. And thank you for continuing to download and subscribe. I know we've been talking quite a bit about the political situation in Ottawa recently. We talked about the change in leadership with the Conservative Party of Canada, the protest, but that continues to be the big story. And first, before we get into it, I was a little bit critical that we hadn't heard very much from the Prime Minister in the last week or so about what went on in Ottawa. He spoke at the House of Commons last night, which I thought was one of the hallmark, like just top level speeches he's done as the Prime Minister or in his career in politics at all. Here is some of that from the House of Commons last night during an emergency debate on the big protest in Ottawa.
We're worn down. None more worn down than our frontline health workers who've been going flat out for 2 years. But everyone's tired of having to wear masks, having to follow public health restrictions. Families like mine just last week that test positive, you know, have to follow public health rules, have to isolate themselves. Nobody wants to do that. I don't know how many conversations parents have had to have with kids about not going to birthday parties, but not getting to have sleepovers. This pandemic has sucked for all Canadians. But Canadians know the way to get through it is to continue listening to science, continuing to lean on each other, continuing to be there for each other.
And to join me to talk about that and to discuss what it's like in Ottawa right now, because he's there, Peter Fragascatos, who, of course, is the Member of Parliament for London North Centre, joining us here on the Craig Needles Podcast. Hey, Peter, thank you so much for doing this, and thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you for having me on.
You were there last night. This is something that I think some Canadians had wanted to see, and they saw it, and I thought the Prime Minister rose to the moment quite well. Your thoughts on his remarks and the way that he was speaking to Canadians who, like he said, has been going through a frustrating pandemic. I thought it was a great line when he said this pandemic has sucked for everyone. And he was kind of trying to speak to all Canadians there at that point last night.
I think the Prime Minister spoke with passion. He expressed not just his point of view, but I think he captured the point of view of the vast majority of Canadians. This has been a very difficult time. For most of us, it's been the most difficult time we've ever experienced. But the question is, how do we react? Do we support one another? Do we find ways to give of ourselves, and however that might be? Do we look into our communities and see where we can best assist? All of these things. Do we get vaccinated so that we're safe and that our families are safe and that our fellow community members are safe? Or do we give in to a notion of freedom that is so self-centered that it has nothing to do with freedom at all, but instead has everything to do with mob rule? And those in Ottawa are embracing precisely that conception of freedom. You know, I hesitate to even call it freedom, as I say, but they're evidently convinced. And what we see transpiring in Ottawa is a low point in modern Canadian political history. I'm here, I'm in Ottawa, I'm doing my job, I will continue to do my job. But to see it every day is quite something. I've said it for many years that Canadian democracy is not immune from a populist right-wing tendency. We've seen it materialize in the United States, and now we see it materialize here in Canada, evidently carried out by a very small minority of people, but a very vocal minority. And you know, it's one thing to witness it as an MP. I'm able to do my job. I've not been obstructed from that. The horns continue to blare, but I don't hear those horns in the House of Commons. Just imagine what it's like for people who live here, especially seniors and young families. Those are, I think, the groups that have struggled the most through this, and it has been a living hell for them. So it's we're at a low point in Canadian history, but I'm glad to see that police are responding as they should now, and hopefully we're past it sooner rather than later.
I hope so too, and I really do feel for the people in the downtown area of Ottawa. And I know you've got a new baby at home, and my kids are pretty young. I just can't imagine sort of being a parent and trying to get kids to sleep and whatnot with all that going on. Like, oof, that just it kind of sends shivers up the spine a little bit. Sort of thinking, okay, do we feel safe, or do we feel like our kids can sleep in our own home? Like, if we're getting to that point, like, what are we even doing here?
Exactly. And I don't know what to do. Do you laugh or cry when you hear this group of individuals? I hesitate to call them protesters, because what they're doing is not protest. It has much more in common with sedition. But we can get into that later if you wish.
Oh, of course.
The everyday lives of people has been dramatically impacted. You know, residents here who pay their property taxes, follow the rules, just want to get to work, or just want to take their kids to school, or just want to go out and get groceries, cannot do that. Or if they can, they've been severely obstructed from doing so. We're talking about a group of individuals who have amassed themselves and who have carried out so many disrespectful things. Not only have they mistreated people living here, they have dishonored the statue of Terry Fox. They defecated on the tomb of the unknown soldier. They have assaulted individuals. Where healthcare workers wanted to get to work, they have prevented them from doing so. What took a doctor or a nurse 15 minutes now takes 2 hours to get to the hospital, in many cases, not just a few cases. It is not acceptable. It must not happen in a democracy. It is, and it's up to all of us to think long and hard about why it's taken place, how to prevent it from happening again, and most of all, at least in the moment, to put it to an end, because it must end. This is not how we conduct ourselves in democracy. It's all well and good, Craig, and I think we've had this discussion over the years, for people to protest, to put their point of view forward in a peaceful way. If people don't want to get vaccinated, or if they have problems with vaccine mandates and they wish to congregate at Parliament Hill away from others and not obstructing the freedom of others, that's fine. I disagree with their position on vaccines and mandates, as I think most Canadians do. But peaceful protest is something that's a cornerstone of democracy. It's quite different when we have people actively getting in the way of the freedom of others. That is what makes this illegal. It's what makes it a blockade. And the political perspective of those on the ground here who have organized this, it merits comment, but it also does not merit comment, because the demands are so absurd. They are advocating for the overthrow of a democratically elected government. You cannot have a discussion with these people. You cannot negotiate with these people. So that's how I see it.
Yeah, and we'll get back to that in a second, but I agree entirely. If the starting point of the negotiation is, hey, what if we were to have a new government that was not elected by the people of Canada, then where do you go from there? Like, there's nowhere to go from there. But I want to go back to something you said there, which you said, you know, this is illegal, this is a blockade, and I agree. But people might hear you say that and say, well, wait a minute. Well, why can't, you know, the federal or provincial or municipal government be doing anything about that if that's been going on for as long as it has? And I know there's jurisdictional matters here and orders of operation and things along those lines, but this has been going on for closing it on 2 weeks now.
And it is up to the Ottawa police, as the police force of jurisdiction, to respond, and they have been. I know there's been criticism. I'll be frank with you. I think it's been warranted criticism of Ottawa police. In terms of their response, I'm not sure. Well, not that's not putting it right. I know that they did not expect this. They underappreciated the extent to which there would be a problem. But now they've come around to recognizing exactly what is taking place. And they've asked for assistance. So as I think you know, the way it works in terms of policing and an emergency response is an act like this does fall under the jurisdiction in the first instance of the local police force. If they're overwhelmed, then they ask for the support of the province. And if the province is overwhelmed, then the province can ask for the support of the federal government. In this case, OPP officers are on the ground helping, and around 300 RCMP officers are now on the ground assisting. And as the Prime Minister made clear in his remarks last night, should there be a desire for more assistance, then federal resources will be made available to the maximum extent. We see this as I think the vast majority of Canadians see it, as a genuine emergency that needs to be resolved immediately. And we're working towards making that happen.
Let's talk about the political views of those who are protesting and or blockading or whatever terminology you want to use. And I will say this. If someone says, hey, in the age of Omicron, do we necessarily need there to be rules surrounding truckers as far as whether they get exemptions crossing the border with vaccinations? I think that there's a legitimate conversation to be had there. But it becomes very clear very quickly that that's not what this is all about. And that's not what the goal is, or that's not what the notion is here. This is something completely different than that.
I think vaccine mandates are important. They're a necessary tool when hospitals are overwhelmed. That is the primary reason for the continuation of vaccine mandates, mandates introduced either at the federal or provincial levels. And what began as a protest against mandating vaccination for truck drivers has evidently turned into something else, where every grievance under the sun, basically, held by a small minority of individuals, has that's what this has now turned into. The convoy has come to Ottawa, and yes, I still do hear among those on the ground here concerns about the mandate for truckers, the vaccine mandate for truckers. But I also see messages and hear messages that have nothing to do with that at all. In fact, that original message has been completely drowned. It's been completely overwhelmed by individuals who are embracing conspiracy theories, who are embracing racist points of view. I didn't mention before, but as we all saw, you know, flags carrying the swastika emblem of the Nazi Party, a Confederate flag, which, as most people recognize, is the flag of slavery from the U.S. Civil War. This is not a protest anymore, if it ever was one. This is something quite different. And by blockading the area, they have made clear that they have no respect for the rule of law. And on that point, you know, you have the vast majority of Canadians who see this as an illegal act. You have most political parties, with the exception of one, that have outright condemned what has happened. But the so-called Party of Law and Order, the Conservative Party, with a proud tradition of, you know, great leaders like Flora McDonald and Robert Stanfield and Joe Clark and Brian Mulroney, Bill Davis, Peter Lougheed at the provincial level. You know, this is a party with a proud tradition. What it's morphed into now, I don't know. And I have a lot of conservative friends. I'm not sure what my conservative friends and colleagues are thinking when they more or less have embraced the message of the convoy, a message of sedition, a message that seeks to overthrow, or an approach rather, that seeks to overthrow a democratically elected government. So yeah, this is not about mandates anymore, Craig. It's about something quite different. It's about a number of different things that have no place in democracy, period.
Yeah, and that's the frustration for, I know some people who supported this at the beginning, but to me, you could have sort of seen the elements here of something that wasn't going to be good from the very, very start of this. When Pat King is involved in something, typically I would not want to be involved in it. You know what I mean? Like it's a situation where if there are people with these types of views who think, oh yeah, this is great and everything's going fine here, then that should be a red flag. And it should have been a red flag for the Conservative Party of Canada. And we saw Candace Bergen's remarks last night, the interim leader, when she's talking about how the prime minister is using this to divide or whatever it happens to be, or Canadians are more divided than ever because of the prime minister's comments. A, I don't think that's true just from a polling perspective. And B, I just think that you've already sort of legitimized this group. And that's part of the reason why they've been able to move the way that they have. So there's some level of irony in those comments saying that the government itself is dividing Canadians on this particular issue.
Ms. Bergen is, as you say, the new interim leader of the Conservative Party. She has been dining with convoy participants. You know, I this is unbelievable that the leader of the opposition, the federal opposition party, has decided to side with the convoy. And I was there yesterday when, in the emergency debate after the prime minister spoke, Ms. Bergen stood up and talked about how it's time for a solution. It's time for the prime minister and the federal government to work with the opposition, namely the Conservative Party, to bring this action to an end. The irony of this is not lost on me and shouldn't be lost on anyone. You know, Conservative Party MPs have been serving coffee and donuts literally to the convoy participants, you know, almost on a daily basis. They have been actively engaging with them. Another Conservative MP, Rachel Thomas, wrote a opinion piece. It might have been in the Toronto Sun, I'm not sure, arguing, making clear that she completely sides with the convoy, and we've seen what the convoy has done here. So, this is a party that, on the one hand, it makes a clear message about law and order, but on the other hand, it seems that they only agree with law and order when it's a group of individuals doing something that they agree with. It's unbelievable what's happened.
And the part that disappoints me is, look, I think that having an opposition, especially in a minority government situation, an opposition that presents, you know, real factual criticisms of the government is really, really important. It's an important part of our democracy. But when we have the opposition sort of deciding that they're going to make something like this the prime minister's problem, as leaked emails from the interim leader explained, then they're just, you know, using something that is causing some significant problems in the lives of some Canadians, those who live in the downtown Ottawa area. They're using that politically, and that's just hard for me to wrap my head around. I think that having that credible opposition is something that sadly has been lacking during the last couple of weeks here.
I think that in a democracy, Craig, you need an opposition. It is absolutely vital and necessary, that goes without saying. But there's responsibility that comes not only with freedom, but with political freedom specifically. The Conservative Party is, as I say, a party with a tradition. They've had a number of impressive opposition leaders. I mentioned a few, and I mentioned other leaders that they've had as well, not just opposition leaders. But what the party is now embracing is, I mean, they are flirting with right-wing populism. And we've seen from the example of other democracies what happens when that transpires. It is, it's objectionable. And the more that they cozy up to it, so to speak, I think that they really think that they really need to consider long and hard what forces they are helping to unleash. Again, 90% of Canadians are vaccinated, Craig. In other words, 90% of Canadians are moderate and reasonable. There's also a group of Canadians that maintain hesitancy for reasons that are still understandable. Pregnant women, for example. I know I've spoken with constituents who are in that position who have had concerns about the lack of data on how a vaccine might affect pregnancy. There's more information coming out on that, making clear that vaccines are in fact safe for pregnant women. There's other individuals who are immunocompromised and otherwise would take a vaccine, but because of their situation have been hesitant to do so. I'm not talking about those types of concerns. You know, when I speak with constituents who think the vaccine is a microchip, for goodness sake, and you'd be surprised how many conversations I've had with individuals over the past many, many months about that. And then that also morphs with a radical perspective and take on Canadian politics, the media, as if something's it's all a big conspiracy on the part of the elite. All these things come together and create a populist rise that is held by, a minority of people, but is obviously having a negative effect. And when an opposition party almost embraces that completely, and not all Conservative MPs have, but it's a minority of MPs that have spoken out on this, spoken against the convoy. That tells you something about the modern day Conservative Party. It's sad to see.
So my question, I suppose, is, and you likely don't know the answer off the top of your head, but how does this end? Like, where does this go from here? Because there's two questions, there's two answers to this, I suppose. There's the short-term answer and the long-term answer. A, how do the streets get back to normal in the city of Ottawa? But B, how does it end that we've got this percentage of Canadians who are just kind of so far off of what the logical analysis of this pandemic would provide? There's going to be a long time where we're kind of reckoning this. And that's what I'm a little bit afraid of, is this is just going to be something that we're dealing with for a long time, even if it's not the pandemic, but the political fallout from the pandemic.
How does it end? The protesters have made their point. I said protesters. I caught myself here. I don't think they should be called that. So the convoy has made its point. It's time for them to go home. They need to go home. They can express themselves from their homes. They're free to do so. Life needs to resume back to normal here in Ottawa, and frankly in other cities where action continues to transpire. I see Windsor's having an issue. We had some issues in London over the weekend, as mm-hmm. I'm sure you saw. Toronto, Quebec City, and I'll be honest with you, I do worry about this, the copycat effect. And this continuing, but the sooner it ends, the less of a likelihood that we see the potential for such an effect. So to be frank about it, it needs to end immediately, and it's up to police to end it, and they have the ability to end it. And should the Ottawa police need more resources, as I made clear, they will have the assistance of the federal government through the RCMP. And I'm sure that Premier Ford will assign more officers from the Ontario Provincial Police to assist. He must. This cannot happen. This cannot be allowed to happen in a democracy where a group of individuals makes it their aim, the active overthrow of a government, to be of a democratically elected government, to be replaced by them. And I think they're now calling they're now open to a coalition with the Bloc and the NDP and the Governor General. This is just, you can't make this stuff up. It is not just, it's bizarre, okay, to put it mildly. But, their manifesto, if I understand it, has nothing at all to do with democracy. This is a group of individuals that would have loved to be, and who knows, may have been, some of the participants may have been participating January 6th in the United States. They want the overthrow of a government. They blame the government. They link vaccine mandates to, as they understand it, a fascist act. So many of those on the ground here would be the first to support a fascist tendency. Evidently through their actions, that's clear. and there's no room for discussion. There must not be any discussion or negotiation with such individuals. I'm glad the Prime Minister has not spoken with them. I do not want the Prime Minister to speak with them. I know that that's how the vast majority of my constituents, I would say, 98-99% of the people that I've heard from in our office who have emailed or called, they feel that same way.
Yeah, like I said earlier, to me, if the starting point of the conversation is we want to replace the government that was elected by Canadians a few months ago with a few people that we pick and choose from our little committee here, if that's the starting point of the conversation, just there's literally nowhere to go. Like if this is where someone is at when they come to the table, then what's the point of even going to the table at all? So no, I couldn't agree more there. I just I worry about the future from the perspective of, there are kind of, families that are broken up with this stuff and people that, like you said, they're calling your office thinking that there's microchips in the vaccine. And there are people right now that are on the internet saying, oh, no, the vaccine causes AIDS or some sort of vaccine related AIDS. Like if people are that far gone, I just don't know if there's any coming back for them. And that's the part that's scary to me. Is this just going to be sort of a permanent state of this sort of conspiratorial type of stuff that this group is sort of pushing? And is that going to happen, long past the time we're done with COVID? That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah. The other question, I obviously share your concern as well. The other issue that that will have to be considered thoughtfully after this, I mean, it was being considered already, but especially after this, it will need a great deal of attention among lawmakers, is social media, and the organizing platform that it has offered this group of individuals. Right-wing movements, right-wing beliefs, extreme right-wing beliefs, I should say, that's not new. We've seen that before in Canada, in the 1980s, into the 1990s, there was challenges with neo-Nazi groups. Going far back in history, we do have examples of Ku Klux Klan activity in Canada. That's been well documented, even in places like London, it has to be said. The challenge now is social media, because in those previous times, social media did not obviously exist, and therefore organizing was much more challenging for such groups and the individuals within such groups. I mean, they would gather, express themselves, and then you wouldn't hear from them, or if you did, it was not like this. It has to be said, the convoy is very well organized. Extremely well organized. A lot of planning clearly went into what they're carrying out, and social media facilitated that. We saw that with GoFundMe, obviously, and I'm glad to see that GoFundMe made eventually the right decision and has not allowed the millions of dollars that were raised to go to the convoy. But they're continuing to organize other platforms. I believe, as of yesterday, anyway, they had raised $5 million. And they continue to interact. They continue to find ways to carry out their actions by communicating through social media. I believe in the freedom that individuals have to express themselves online. That's important. Facebook, there's many good things about it. Twitter, Instagram, all these things, there's positives. But evidently there is negatives too. And I think we need a real discussion on the place of social media, because it does facilitate, as much as it facilitates democratic discourse, it also can do the opposite, clearly. So I think that's another lesson here, certainly for all of us to zero in on.
Yeah, and that's a complicated one, because I just don't know how you parse the good from the bad from a legislative perspective.
I don't know the answer to that either, Craig. I don't mean to suggest that I have that answer. I do not, but I think it needs to be asked. I think that we're living at a time where this is not going anywhere, right? I mean, the convoy, they'll leave. they will eventually leave. As I say, I hope it's much sooner rather than later. But this extremism is here, and social media does facilitate its organization. So I think social media companies have to also recognize that where their freedoms exist to operate as companies, they also have a duty. They also have responsibility. You can never have freedom without responsibility in a democratic society or duty to others. That's true for individuals, but that's true of corporations as well. By allowing such movements to organize themselves in such a fashion that they've allowed, that they've blockaded an entire, not an entire city, but close to it, I think social media companies have to be part of a conversation and have to show that they're ready to lead when it, on the question of preventing extremism. How that happens, there's a lot of smart people out there, much smarter than me, that still don't have answers to that. But it doesn't mean that we ignore the question. I think we have to run towards the question.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And time to talk about that in the future, certainly. I do want to ask you one more about the ongoing blockade in Ottawa for now. The police obviously have asked for some RCMP assistance already, and they've received some. Perhaps there's more to come. Do you think that there will have to be, or there may have to be, or I don't even know if have to be is the right word, but there may be violence associated with putting an end to what's going on in the downtown of Ottawa? And look, I don't want that, but I sort of look at the situation here and sort of see this, how entrenched things are, and think to myself, that may be something that just inevitably happens, whether it's started by those who are blockading the streets, whether it's started by the police, or whatever it happens to be, that just may inevitably be what happens here. Is that something you've thought about as well?
I have thought about it. It is very possible, Craig. That's not, there's no reason to deny that. It is very possible. I know the police will approach things professionally. They will carry themselves out as the professionals that they are. But we are dealing with extremists. We're dealing with individuals. And I know, your listeners who may disagree with me on these points, they will point to the young families that have come here and the outdoor barbecues that are happening and the bouncy castles. And, you know, they'll say, well, evidently those people are not violent. No, those people are not violent, but they're still part of an illegal activity. Within that, there are extremist elements that would embrace violence. I worry, in fact, that they are actively courting it, that they wish to see violence. They've already assaulted, everyday citizens here. Reports emerged yesterday, as you might have seen, of an attempted arson at an apartment building carried out, it would seem, by convoy participants. So, yeah, clearly within this group of individuals, there is this potential. And we're dealing with individuals also that embrace not just a right-wing extremism, but one that also is tied up with an embrace of anarchy as well. And anarchists want to break the system, literally. They believe that violence is the way to bring down, from their point of view, a corrupt social, political, and economic system. So core to the philosophy of anarchism is violence. And where such individuals embrace that that outlook, they won't hesitate to use violence if they can. So yes, I think that there is real potential for this to happen. I hope not, but you're right to say that it might.
I also hope not. The other, I guess, wild card here, the thing that I wonder about is, we've seen some Ottawa police officers who have, been posing for photos and letting canisters of diesel get to the downtown area. And the way that comes off to those who are observing this and those who are in the media and watching some of the things is, hey, do some Ottawa police officers, are they supportive of this? Are they wanting this to happen? And with that being the case, there just is another variable that could be thrown into the mix here when it comes to however this may have to come to an end.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that that has happened. But I look at the vast majority of police officers, here in Ottawa now, but it's been my experience over the years serving in the role that I do as a member of Parliament. I have deep respect for what police do. They sacrifice themselves. Their families make incredible sacrifices. Do the actions of a few police officers who have posed, as you say, with convoy participants in photos, and is that representative of police? No, it's not, and I don't think that's the point that you're making. But it's where that's happened. Yes, that is unfortunate.
Yeah, so I just don't know how that necessarily impacts what it is that we're doing here going forward, and whether that changes the way this is perceived. And I suppose the last topic I'll ask you about before we wrap up here is the way that the entirety of this is perceived, because there are some Canadians who are going to say, oh, okay, and I saw some polling today saying 32% of Canadians agree with some or all of the points of the convoy. Now, I think that people that would have taken that poll may not have known or been aware of or are aware of the finer points or some of the very, very obvious points that the convoy is trying to make here. But there is some level of political division. So how do we as a democracy, how do we as a country navigate that in the next few weeks here?
Yeah, that 30% number I've seen as well. So I think you've got people that disagree with vaccine mandates, and there's a discussion to be had between reasonable people about the place of vaccine mandates. As I said, I don't mean to be repetitive here, but I think it's important for listeners to understand why governments continue to believe in their legitimacy and efficacy. When we have hospitals that are seeing such numbers. I mean, our hospitals in London continue to have a very challenging time, not just with admitted patients that have tested positive for COVID-19, but our ICUs, our intensive care units, in a very difficult situation over the past several weeks, and a number of healthcare workers into the hundreds have lived with COVID-19. So vaccine mandates are quite critical to ensure the sustainability of the healthcare system. The question going forward about unity within Canada, people disagree all the time in democracy. It is absolutely necessary. The question is, does that disagreement carry over to outright illegal activity and violent activity? And the vast majority of Canadians do not embrace that. You might have the 30% who agree with some of the perspectives of the convoy, but you don't see them here in Ottawa, right? We're talking about a few hundred individuals, by the way, in Ottawa. A minuscule representation of the overall Canadian population. So I've seen headlines in newspapers that say, "Well, Canada's deeply divided, and the convoy experience testifies to that." No, I don't think that we're divided. I think there's lingering deep frustration with the effects of the pandemic, and that should be our focus. The virus has caused this, right? The virus has upended our lives, and political leaders and health leaders are doing their best to react and do whatever they can to help people during this moment. We have to continue to support one another. We have to continue to listen to public health authorities. We have to do the right things. I might sound like a broken record over the past 2 years. I think I've repeated that phrase so many times, but it's the truth, Craig. And where such actions exist, we have police in place to respond. And one thing that didn't come up in this interview, but I want to underline, Craig, is that politicians cannot direct police during police operations. It's up to police to respond for very understandable reasons. We're not experts on policing. It's up to police to do their work, and where such actions manifest, we have police in place to respond. So it unfortunately was off to a slow start, to put it mildly, on the part of Ottawa police. But hopefully in the next next few days, you see more concerted action, more focused action, and you'll have, well, not you'll have, you have now three police forces working together to end this situation.
I hope the very same. Peter, is there anything else that you wanted to add or mention here or bring up before we wrap up our conversation?
No, I just I want people to know that I'm thinking of them, and our office, of course, continues to, our constituency office continues to be available to individuals in need of assistance, to business owners in need of assistance. That has been our basic job over the past two plus years now, or almost 2 years. You know, I'm going to continue to do my job, and I won't be intimidated either. I suppose if I'll add one other thing, it would be that, because I've had people call, friends, family, but also, you know, people of goodwill, constituents who I've never met, very concerned about my well-being and the well-being of our staff. We're going to continue to do our job. And here in Ottawa, I will not be intimidated, nor will any other MP. We will go to the House of Commons, the Cathedral of Canadian Democracy, as it's been called. It is exactly that. It's an honor to serve, and I'm not going to allow a few individuals who do not believe in democracy, in fact, embrace the opposite, to get in my way of being the member of Parliament for London North Centre.
I think that's a good spot to leave it. Peter, thank you so much for this. Kind of a wide-ranging conversation, talking about sort of the state of our democracy and a few other things. So I'm glad that we could have it. Thank you so much for giving us as much time as you did.
Oh, this was, I always enjoy speaking to you, Craig. So thank you very much for reaching out, and I wish you and your family nothing but the best.
That's Peter Fragascatos, the Member of Parliament for London North Centre, with his take on what's going on in Ottawa. And I do want to add, I know that I get people saying on Twitter that it's hyperbole when you say that the convoy people want to overthrow the government. Listen to this from their own news conference last night. I didn't make any of this up. I'm not creating their own narrative for them. This is something they said at their own news conference earlier in the week.
We're here to talk. Let's find a peaceful resolution to this. I want to go home. I want to go home. But I'm not. I'm not going until I'm no longer needed here. And based on all the support that we have from the people of Canada, I have an incredible amount of support and a lot of people that seem to want me here. And I'm not going home until the job is done. Okay? I am not calling for violence. I'm not expecting you to get into your vehicle, drive here, and create problems, create crimes. Okay, that's not what we're saying. Strength in numbers. We got sent here to send a message. The message isn't getting through. He's not getting it. And I apologize if I'm bashing the guy, but honestly, from my assessment, he's got a 22 caliber mind in a 357 world. Okay, let's get at a table, for God's sakes. Enough hiding. I'm willing to sit at a table with the Conservatives and the NDP and the Bloc as a coalition. I'll sit with the Governor General. You put us at the table with somebody that actually cares about Canada.
That's right from their news conference. That is them saying that they want to sit as a coalition with the Bloc Québécois, New Democrats, and the Conservatives, which of course cuts the Liberals out. And of course, every single Liberal member of Parliament was elected in a free and fair vote just a few months ago. So explain to me how that's not subverting democracy to say, oh yeah, no, we just want the Governor General to cut out the party that got the most seats in an election, and then that'll just solve the problem. We'll sit in their place. None of us, of course, earned a single vote from anyone. I guess except for the ones who were PPC candidates. But they didn't win their elections. Explain to me how that's not subverting democracy. It is. If you want to be critical of Justin Trudeau, I will be right there with you. I think there are many things that we can be critical of Justin Trudeau for. But, hey, I don't want to meet with people who want to essentially have a coup of the Canadian government. I will not be critical of him for that choice. No, thank you. So it's not me creating something that doesn't exist. That's just their own thought process. They want to replace the governing party of Canada, despite the fact that they did not receive votes. Explain to me how that's not subverting democracy. We'll wrap up here. That's all the time we've got for this episode of the Craig Needles Podcast. We'll do another episode for you on Friday, which I hope you can tune into. More of the Craig Needles Podcast, hopefully talking about not this. I'm trying to figure out exactly what we're going to do on Friday, but I don't want to talk about this. Hopefully nothing happens that makes it so we have to discuss this. But they will be talking more about whatever's going on, whatever we can figure out on the Craig Needles Podcast coming up on Friday. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. And please continue to find us at classicrock981.com, londonnewstoday.ca, and on your favorite podcast app.
The Craig Needles Podcast is a presentation of Blackburn Media.